Greetings, everybody. I am William DeHewitt, and I am broadcasting live from the vast plains of the Free State, somewhere in the old Boer Republic. Last week, I did a show called Straight from the Gift Horse's Chewy Mouth. And basically what I did, or had done, was read the own words of some Jew named Harold Rosenthal. And Harold Rosenthal basically had spilled the beans and had been telling the world just how the Jews as a whole race had been genociding the Aryan race. And this was back in 1973, before I was even born. Or no, I'm sorry, it was 76, 2 years after I was born. My bad, the other one was from 73. But, yes, if you had the chance to hear that show live, there was a lot of information I gave, and this show will be a continuation. The only difference is that I have the great Mike Sledge on the line again, and Mike is going to be helping me to finish this part two of a broadcast, and he's going to join me and give his commentary on the other articles that I didn't have a chance to read last week. One of them is, well, two, there's two, both of them that I wrote. One of them I wrote and the other one I republished. I'm going to be focusing more on the one that I wrote called Racist Anti-White Jewess. Says, all whites are racist until whiteness is defunct. Mike, I'd like to thank you for joining me. How are you today, my friend?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me on.
Well, my pleasure. I hope you will enjoy this topic. I know you didn't really plan on finishing this up with me, but I felt it appropriate because the next topic, well, you and I were having a discussion before the show, and it's a very interesting topic. I'm going to save it until after we get through this show first, or do you think I should mention what you and I were talking about?
Save it and do your research and your journalist topics for the first part, and then we'll get into that later in the show. That's fine.
Okay.
It's an honor to be on your broadcast, by the way. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Mike. Really, the honor is all mine, though, really. All right, so then let's just get right into this article. I had done some research. I had crossed this woman. Her name is Jillian Shuttle. And, boy, this she's a South African Jewess who's married to a Negroid. And some of the things that were coming out of this Jewess's mouth, Mike, were so vile that I had lumped her in and compared some of her quotes with Rabbi Ignatieff. No, wait, where is this? We know who I'm talking about? Ignatieff Noel?
Rabbi Schneerson. Rabbi Schneerson.
Yeah, that brought. Yeah, him too. But yeah,
or,
Ishmael.
Professor Ignatieff Noel, right?
Yeah, Noel Ignatieff, yes. And Susan Sontag. These quotes by this Jewess, this South African Jewess, are so vile that she is up there with them. And I have all those quotes documented in the article, folks. Yes, I have the document, Alex.
You have the documents right here, William. You're going to break them down on InfoWars, DEFCON 5, DEFCON 6, folks.
Thank you. Yes, Alex, I will. So let's get right into this. The title is Racist Anti-White Jewess Says, quote, all whites are racist until whiteness is defunct. All right. Hello, William. I'm Jillian Shuttle, and I'm the person who exposed Judge Mabel Jansen's racist utterances on social media. And to be accurate, these utterances were openly and voluntarily expressed on my Facebook page in a public debate. All right, so you have this Maybelle Jansen, okay? She's a white South African judge. And she was having a talk with this Jillian Shuttle Jewess on Facebook. And this is the quote of the judge. It's a little lengthy, but I have to read it so that the audience understands what I am so upset about, okay? All right, so here's the quote. Jillian, do you believe I'm even propositioned by my black colleagues who tell me that they will be in Hotel X and expect me to report there at a specific time? I am shell-shocked. In their culture, and she's referring to blacks, okay? In their culture, a woman is there to pleasure them, period. It is seen as an absolute right, and a woman's consent is not required. You may find this hard to accept and unpalatable as I did. I still have yet to meet a black girl who was not raped at about age 12. I'm dead serious. It is only now that women realize that they have rights and have to be taken up seriously that we are being hit by the veritable tsunami of rape cases. But we often have to hear it that it was only about the third time that they sought to report it, that they were taken up seriously. Now, she goes on to say, mothers are so brainwashed that they tell their children that it is the father's birthright to be the first, to be their first sexually, okay? I must hand you 10, 20, 30, 40 files, and you will adopt a completely different attitude. The white people have a lot to account for, but this, I feel like vomiting. So, no, the black people are by far no angels. Their conduct is despicable. Murder is also not a biggie. Gang rapes a baby, daughter, and mother a pleasurable pastime. That, in reality, is the flip side of the coin. They are simply now in a position to branch out and include white women. No, Jillian, the true facts are most definitely not that espoused by the liberals. That was the quote of Judge Maybelle Johnson, and this Jewess, this vile Jewess, had the chutzpah to call this white judge, this South African judge, a racist out of that those few paragraphs that I just read to you right there.
Wow.
Now, I must also preface and say that this is a very appropriate time that I read this article, because in the South African Jew media, especially on the television, this entire month has been like Women's Week or Women's Month, where they are having these. There's a campaign to stop the violence. Remember in the 90s when the Negroids, we're talking about stopping killing each other, stop the violence. Well, they're telling each other that they need to stop the women violence, stop the women femicide is what they call it. There's white genocide happening here in this country, but you have Negroids focusing on Negroids with Negresses being raped. Now, this is what 3 years ago, this very judge who was demonized was actually calling this out, saying that, yes, this is what Negroids are doing to their Negresses, right? They're raping them. They're having their way with them, having sex with their daughters when they become of age or even before age. And so this judge was demonized, and now they have it on mainstream Jew, Negroid, South African TV on how we need to stop the Negress femicide. Mike.
Well, it's amazing how far the Me Too movement has become. I can tell you years ago, I had to sit on jury duty back in like 1997, 98. I sat on a jury duty with a Dindu who raped his cousin, or was accused to have raped his cousin, his female cousin. Who was like 12 or 11, 12, 13, somewhere around there. And, you know, when he was brought in, he was dumbfounded. He was like, yo, man, why man be brought here, man? We all do this shit. You know what I'm saying? It's part of our culture. I mean, they are, for better or worse, the black people are sexualized at an earlier rate. And this goes back to the Talmudic mindset. This goes back to the Talmud. Because remember, black AME, African Methodist type of Christianity, evangelical Christianity, is directly correlated to the Talmud, okay, in its fundamentalist behaviors. So when these people were brought over by the Dutch India Trade Organization on the ships to be to displace the white working class in the plantations who were picking the cotton, to replace them, the original replacement, they were brainwashed and broken down into accepting basically a new form of Talmudic Judaism, which was then turned into what's called African Methodist Evangelicalism, or AME Talmudicism, which basically is the same thing as the Talmud. Okay, so as slaves being brought over by the Yids, they were brainwashed into accepting a black form of Talmudicism, which is what explains the black Israelites today, by the way, in this country, because that's the next step in the evolution of this philosophy. Very dangerous. But they sexualization at an early age is rampant in the black community, whether it be in Africa or the United States, and in the Judeo community at a very, very early age. That is unacceptable to Aryan people. We believe there is an age of consent. We believe that is at 18, and that age was actually brought up for a very special reason, because at 18, due to science, we determined that the brain can hold this amount of information and can discern more, and it is opened up more, and your discernment is at a greater level at that age. That is why the age of consent in most white countries is 18, 17 at the lowest, because of this discernment factor in the human mind. This is all scientific. We base it on
science.
Let
me add something to that, Mike.
Yeah,
if I may.
Yeah.
That is, you say the age of consent being 18 for the mature 18-year-old Aryan woman. That doesn't even say, we know that the other races, such as the blacks, they don't have the same mature 18-year-old mind that an Aryan woman would have. So for them to be raped at 12 or 13 is even worse.
You know, it's even worse. I mean, the average IQ of a person of color at 18, based upon the sliding scale of the bell curve, is around it's around the mindset of a 9 or 10 year old at 18. The average mindset of an Aryan, of a European female at 16, is around the mindset of a person of color of around 24, 25. So the sliding scale doesn't work, but again, we don't base these laws on eugenics or racism. We base them on a blanket statement based upon our people, because we are the lawgivers. We come out with the laws. And, but yeah, it is pretty disgusting, man. You're absolutely right.
Well, I just thought it appropriate that I go over this article particularly just because of how this, they've been ramping up, trying to stop the femicide. They're actually calling it a femicide here.
Well, most of, I had a family member back in the day that was in the GBI, Georgia Bureau of Investigation,
and they were actually involved in investigations of the slave trade, sex slave trade, back late 80s to like mid 90s. And I can tell you that it was Jamaican gangs, black gangs, MS-13, Judeo gangs, the syndicate, predominantly involved in this trade, okay? And so we have higher standards for our people, and we wish those higher standards on the other races that come in to our lands and our countries. But unfortunately, the Judeo-Talmudic mindset is the same as the Afrocentric Talmudic mindset, which was actually programmed by the Judaic mindset in the Dutch East India slave trade, who broke them down and made them accept Talmudic ideas and turned them into debased forms of aggression that we have to deal with today.
Yeah.
And that's part of their divide and conquer strategy. But, yep.
Well, no, that's absolutely correct. They knew this, which is why they bring them into every one of our countries to disrupt us. But, you know, I'm going to go back into this article here. For this Jew alien shuttle to, you know, demonize this judge, this white South African judge, to me, I wrote it right here in the article, it's an outrage. To me, the judge was just telling it like it is. She was telling the truth. And now her life is in danger. Now, is it racist of me to say that I see Negroids littering, pissing, and shitting in the street here every day? Is it racist of me to say that Negroids, in fact, torture, rape, and murder white South African women, children, and elderly at an alarming genocidal rate?
William,
is it
is racist of you to do that, because you don't understand that we are at the top through our white privilege. We're at the top of the sliding scale, going upright of the bell curve. And because we're sitting at the top of the bell curve, the sliding scale upwardly of white privilege, that when we notice lower IQ, debased cultures, and sexual perversions and all kinds of sick and twisted ways being performed below us, on the sliding scale, the downward slope of the bell curve, we are racist because we were born by birth, you see, with higher IQs and better morals than they have, and they just haven't lived that way yet. And you got to cut them a break, man. You're being too hard, man. You're being too hard. They can't help it. They can't help it. They were born with a chitlin in their mouth.
I know you do not believe this. I know this. You're playing around and giving the excuse that they would give, but I'm going to go on here. Is it racist of me to say that white fathers are forced to powerlessly watch Negroids torture, rape, and murder his family as he's tied up and then slaughtered himself? No, it's not. Damn near every on social media, I come across Negroids saying how much they hate white folk and how they want to see white folk dead. And I'll give you an example, Mike. There's this Negroid, South African Negroid named Tesh Nedlovu. I don't even know how to pronounce his name. This is a quote.
God, I hate his name already.
Yeah, but you got to hear this. This is
I got these African guys coming at me where I work, and it's like, Alabulu Balala Balulu Banunu, engineer of the lab, and I'm like, get the fuck out of here, man. Get back on the fucking Dutch East India.
This quote is coming straight from the gift horse's mouth, folks, all right? This isn't a Negro, a Jew. This is a Negroid. All right. Tesh says, quote, "Yo, man, I'm not like other black people, man." All right, I'm not going to do Negroid voice. All right. He says, "I'm not like other black people who pretend to like white people. I don't like them, and my duty and the duty of others is to eliminate every white person in South Africa. There is usually nothing wrong with compromise in a situation, but compromising yourself in a situation is another story completely. And I have seen this happen long enough in the 25 years that I've been alive. Man, you're a prophet there, Tesh, to know that it's a serious problem. So me and others won't compromise ourselves in this situation. The only way to end racism and the oppression of my people, man, is to destroy the white race. This must be done as quickly as possible. Every day a white person lives is one more day that Africans suffer.
You know, in a strange way, I agree with this guy. And let me explain myself with this. In a strange way, I agree with this guy. You know what? If they did destroy us, they would not have any more food. They would have no farmlands. They would have no sustenance. They would be like Ethiopia with flies buzzing around their fucking head while they weigh 55 fucking pounds begging for a tuna fish sandwich from the Jew camera crew. This filming the goddamn event for National Geographic. So, you know, in a way, you know, if they want to ensure their own death, go ahead and genocide us, because when we're gone, they're gone, because our medicine will not be available, our food will not be available, and the flies, the green flies will be available, and they'll rot.
They're all over Africa. They've nowhere to run. So all my brethren out there, if you message, take your sword and all, slaughter them. Bury them alive. They are nothing but lethargic devil. Unquote.
And we know the history. We know the history of Rhodesia, which then became Zimbabwe. And they did the same thing there, and then they begged. Now they're begging the white farmer to come back to feed these ridiculous people. You know, here we don't have Cool Ranch Doritos or Funyun Farms or a Whopper Farms to feed the Negroid. But, well, I guess we do. It's called Monsanto. But that's controlled not by us, but by the tribe. But anyway, I digress.
Well, I just find it amazing that Judge Mabel Jansen, all she said was basically the truth about how the Negroid acts and how what they really do. And then you have this Tesh dude basically telling his fellow Negroids, go ahead and eat us and to make beautiful crafts out of our bones and the torture and rape and
what you're dealing with in all factual manner here is you're dealing with a subhuman low IQ race of people that are being controlled by our Judeo enemy because they know they are low IQ and stupid. And for the most part, they have an IQ that's 4 or 5 points above clinically retarded. And so the Judeo enemy that we face is using them as a wedge, as a proxy against us, because they never fight the battles themselves. And so they know this. Right. And so this is an easy, easy target. You know, I really, you know, the blacks, the Africans are irrelevant to me because at the end of the day, if we defeat the people controlling their minds, we win the war. Okay. We can use them however we want to use them. During the colonialist times, we used them for our benefit. But we were subverted and taken over by a parasite that infiltrated and then now is using them as a wedge, as a way of attacking our people to use them as a proxy army against us, if you will. But I mean, in the long run,
I mean, really, the way to bring an end to this violence is to destroy the parasite at the top of the Oy Vey pyramid. They're the ones controlling this. They're the ones putting out the propaganda. They're the ones propagandizing and filling with hate. They're the ones that controlled the slave ships. The white working class in the South never owned a ship. They were picking cotton on the British mercantile Oy Vey class plantations. They didn't have any slave ships. It's the same argument, to be honest with you, that the blacks used, the black street gangs used during Iran-Contra in the 80s. Yo, man, we didn't have any fucking CIA airplanes and submarines to bring the cocaine in. Shit, all we had was Pyrex dishes and goddamn baking soda. Well, they were right. Oliver North, the CIA, the cocaine import agency, flew the drugs in and then spread them out to the black community, the black gangs, to cook them up in the crack, and then arrested the ones they wanted to arrest to not only make money on the drug war, but to expand the private prison industry. And it's the same thing going on where you're at. They're radicalizing the subhuman classes, the lower IQ classes, as a wedge, as a proxy against us, while they make bank and cash out and use that to take over and replace us at our jobs, by the way. By the way, slavery was the original replacement. It was the original NAFTA. You know, only 2% of the white population in the South owned slaves. Out of that 2%, the majority of it was Jewish that owned slave plantations. The black slaves were the original replacement to the Irish and Slavic white working class on the plantation in the South. Okay, this is a fact. So, and the same thing's being done now with the Rust Belt, with the NAFTA and the free trade agreements. The Mexicans are, and the Hispanics are the second wave of black replacement. And now the Africans, again, are the third wave of a replacement against us. So, you know, this whole thing is fraudulent and sick to the core at best. But we are being replaced, and we never controlled it in the first place. But the Oy Veys that control this whole mindset are going to use the low IQ, clinically retarded populations as a proxy to kill us, because they will believe anything they're told as long as it comes from the mass media Oy Vey mouth, right?
Yeah, but what I have a problem with, Mike, we know all this. Yes, we know the history of this. But what I have a problem with is the hypocrisy, this particular show right now, that this Jewette, straight from her mouth, you know, she demonizes and basically has this judge. And I don't even really care so much about the judge. I mean, I don't know much about Judge Mabel Jansen. This is an older story from a few years ago. But I still find it to be relevant because of the propaganda they've been pushing this entire month about the femicide that is happening in South Africa. We have whites being slaughtered, but no, we got to worry about Negroids femiciding Negresses. So basically then, what I think is, you know,
they have to remember the Jew has to keep in place the wedge, the proxy. So they have to defend the black woman who's being persecuted, because that gives birth in outrageous numbers to the new generations of wedge and proxies against us until we're totally decimated and gotten rid of and defeated. So what she is doing is a surgical racial bomb, a surgical racial strike on our people by pointing out this brutality against the black women, because they need the black women to survive to pump out more low IQ units to make sure we're being repressed.
Yep. So evidently, the above anti-white genocidal hate speaks, well, that's acceptable to Jillian Shuttle. You know, what I'd like to know is what or how is Judge Jansen's factual speech hateful? You know, some Jewish says it's hateful, so it is.
Well,
you know,
no.
We've had 80,000 white South African Boers genocided since 1994. And
well, see, I believe the judge, I believe the judge is probably working with her in a duality propaganda message.
That's saying that point.
So she can attack, right?
That's a good point. So, I think the judge actually lost her position, if I remember correctly.
Well,
I don't know. But that,
well,
we can't
look at her retirement.
Either, so.
Yeah, look at her retirement. Yeah. I'm sure it's pretty good. I don't trust anything that happens at this point on a mainstream media level in any country. I think that what they do, I mean, you know, you have someone here in this country called Judge Jeanine on Fox News, who is a total Zionist Jew shill, who will say racial provocative things on Fox News, just to get a rise and to stir up shit. Okay? Yeah, it's the same thing. But it's a two-pronged attack. Okay? Remember the Frank Cohen, the Frank Collin kind of thing. The Jews will use white nationalist propaganda if they think it'll be more effective in stirring up the low IQ African population against us to continue the wedge, if that benefits them more, while knowing at the same time that unfortunately most of our race is brain dead and stupid, and they will say, oh, I don't support that. I'm not racist. I would never say what she said, because 90% of our own race is so stupid and brainwashed that they'll go against what the wedge is doing. So, you know, this is a, you know, Machiavellian at best, Hegelian dialectic at worst, but it's it all plays into the program, and the people at the top of the Oy Vey pyramid get what they want. They get more hatred from the low IQ populations against the true Aryan people, and at the same time, they consolidate power from using the wedge and the proxy to fight against us, and we lose in the end. Right, William?
Well, yes, but I you're right, Mike. It is the Hegelian dialectic. I'm going to read to you what Shuttle said next. I've read to you what the judge said.
Yeah.
I gave you an example of what most blacks think, and now I'm going to explain. I'm going to give the just Jewess's quote. And you're right. It is the Hegelian dialectic. And I do not fall for the Hegelian dialectic. But this is really happening here. I mean, and all we have to do is use Rhodesia as the example. It's going to happen here. It's just a matter of time. Shuttle says, quote, all whites are racist by virtue of their birth into a system of privilege based the false construct of race. Thus, I say, all whites are racist until whiteness is defunct. She also says, quote, what use are good whites anyway when 22 years later, nothing much has changed for the majority of black people in South Africa? What did the good white syndrome do to change the systematic nature of racism?
I'll tell you what it did.
Defunct. Yeah, all right, go ahead, and I'm going to break that quote down for you afterwards. Go ahead, please.
When South Africa was built up and Rhodesia was built up to a point where they were the harvest and the breadbasket of the continent, they gave more hope to the indigenous black people than any Jew or any social program or UNICEF has ever done for that whole continent. And there were jobs for the black race, the indigenous people, for the Africans, created by the real white people in Rhodesia and in South Africa. Now, after apartheid, and you can talk to old people. I've talked to actually old Africans from those regions of the country that will tell you they wish they were still living under apartheid South Africa because they had a real job. They had more money.
Yeah.
They had more money than they had now. They had more food than they had now. Same thing in Rhodesia. So what's now taking place is they've, through incrementalism, which is the old Bolshevik Jewish way, two steps forward, one step back, the frog in the boil pattern, if you will.
Yes.
They've slowly deflated the wealth over the last three decades and brainwashed at the same time the next generation coming up through the communist schools in South Africa and Rhodesia. Same thing in America. And so now you have the old class of black has basically died off or too weak to fight, and the new class has been radicalized by Judaic communism, Talmudic communism and Bolshevism through the public schools. At the same time, they deflated the wealth that was created by the true Aryan people in South Africa and Rhodesia. So now you have Judaic control through the communist apparatchik, brainwashing the low IQ, and now they're hungry and they're starving, and they're coming against you and not them at the top because you're being blamed for the crimes they committed. Even though what you actually created and what the true European people created in Africa was an economic boom that benefited the indigenous people just as much as it benefited the colonialists and the Europeans that came there. And that is a fact. So now we're seeing this class warfare being played out. You've had three decades and generations of Bolshevik Talmudic brainwashing taking place. Now they're ready for blood. They're ready to kill you because they're starving, even though the reason they're starving is because the Jews at the top of that communist pyramid starved them out and blamed it on you, blamed it on the white people, even though we didn't do it. This is what they do over and over again, and they're doing it there, and it's working. It's working. So you have a feral, uneducated class of Africans now like a wild beast out for blood because they think that you are the reason they are starving, even though you were the reason that they were fed and clothed just three generations ago, and the Jew has distorted it and turned them against you as a wedge. And they do this over and over again, William.
Yeah, and to add insult to injury, Mike, is that white people weren't even behind the apartheid that they benefited from. That's the other sick thing about this, is that we're blamed for apartheid when the laws were written by Jews in the United Kingdom, brought here.
Well, let's remember, the British Yiddish, when the State of Israel was created, actually gave nuclear technology and had a nuclear agreement with South Africa. That is a fact, okay? The Rhodesia, for instance, that goes back to Cecil Rhodes and the Rhodes Scholarship, going back to Oxford, which was
they tear his statues down as if he's a white man. That's the mindset. That just shows me that they don't know what the fuck.
No, but you're dealing with people that are a few points above clinically retarded. And I'm not trying to give them a pass. I can't stand them. I mean, I can't stand to be around them. But they're easily radicalized. They're easily turned against you. But let's not forget who's at the top of the fucking pyramid.
Yes.
It is these fucking Jews, these fucking Oy Vey clowns who have radicalized the low IQ people to turn against them as a wedge, as a proxy to kill us because they can't do their own dirty work.
Thank you for that intro. I want to go back to that quote that Gillian Shuttle said, and that this is what is so important to me. She said that All whites are racist until whiteness is defunct. Defunct, right. Definition, no longer in existence, dead, extinct. An example, a defunct person, a defunct tribe of Aryans. Whiteness, the fact or state of belonging to a human group having light-colored skin. Whiteness was defined as both a racial and a regional characteristic. So this Afrikaner Jewess, Jillian Shuttle, evidently approves of white genocide. And she would be pleased to see the last 6 million Aryans left in South Africa defunct.
Of course they do, because Jews are not white. You know, I don't care what they look white to me. Well, they're not white. They're not white. They're Semitic people. They come from the same batch as the African people, going back to the Khazarians, the 13 tribe, whatever you want to go to. They are not white. White are a specific white. Europeans are a specific DNA class. Okay? But the sad thing is the Jew class, they can blend in with the white race ever so subtle. You know, unless you're trained into this, I know you and I can spot them a mile away, and other people can spot them a mile away. But the average white person that I know that's not a racialist, that's not into this kind of thing, I say, that's a Jew over there. And they go, what are you talking about? How do you know? They don't even know. I know off the bat, okay? I can tell across the room within 1 minute of meeting someone whether they're Jewish or not, and I'm 100% right every fucking time, okay? I'm telling you, all right? So this is a different race. But because most of our people are dumbed down, they don't understand this. They don't see it. We are a minority, okay? And they're easily blended in. I mean, look at what the Third Reich did.
This is why it's so important that we break this down and discuss this, because our people don't know. And They need to understand that it's the Jew instigating all this. It's, you know, everyone wants to hate the black and go to war against the black. But, yeah, they're a problem, but we really need to separate and understand
the way to deal with the black is just to separate and keep your distance from them, and they really won't bother you. They're not going to bother you. You know, separation is the key to that. I'm not a white nationalist. I'm not a white supremacist. I'm a separatist. I tend not to hang around these people. I avoid them as much as possible, just as I would avoid a retarded white person who was low IQ, who was violent. I mean, you know, I don't like to hang around people that are low IQ and violent, who have low impulse control. In a frontal lobe problem. I tend to stay away from that kind of shit. But what the Jew has done is they knew that by blending in and changing laws, they could send these low IQ morons and blend them into our communities to use them as a wedge, a proxy against us. The same way that Barbara Spector is using the Muslim by bombing them out of their indigenous lands in Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, and through bombing campaigns for a greater Israel to flood them into Europe to displace the white people there. It's the same thing. Okay? They did the same thing to the slave trade going back 250, 300 years ago. It's the same program. Okay? The same thing.
Yeah, I don't like using the word Muslim, though. They're Semitic Muslims.
People, well, whatever they are.
Understand that.
They're all fucking Jews.
Well, I know, but I always hear people say, it's the Muslim. No, it's Semitic. Semite Muslim.
If people want to know
Jews, we have to
the
understand
truth.
That too.
If people, you know, and I'm amazed how little this is used
on other radio shows, because I really felt like I was one of the first people to break this down on the history of Saudi Arabia. You know, Saudi Arabia was owned by the British Yiddish for many years. Lawrence of Arabia was the British guy. The Steve Martin song. Well, I got to tell you, read the autobiography of the Saudi, the House of Saud royal family. They admit in their own autobiography that they are Jews and are cousins of the Israeli power base. They admit this in their own book, going back to Mordecai Moshe. So, not to get off topic, but to all the 9/11 conspiracy, to all the 9/11 conspiracy fags, you know, I have to say to you this. Your best move is to support the official story. It was 19 Saudi hijackers who committed 9/11 on behalf of the House of Saud, because the House of Saud are Jews and Saudi Arabia is the real Israel, not Israel. Israel is actually the front. Israel is actually the front Israel. Saudi Arabia is the real Israel. Okay?
Yeah, Israel is the cover.
It was set up by the British Yiddish, going back to Cromwell, years before Israel was in the Balfour Resolution. Okay? So, to piss off all your 9/11 truthers, I believe the Jews did 9/11. I believe in 19 Saudis that ran the planes into the buildings because they are Jews. And Saudi Arabia is a Jewish government. The Wahhabi sect was founded by Mordecai Moshe, a Jewish grains dealer who had sex with Arabic Bedouin women to have offspring to set up a dynasty, okay, to work on behalf of the Catholic Church and the British Empire to protect monuments and so forth in that region of the world. And then through the Balfour Resolution, you had Israel set up later to work in duality, the Begelian dialectic, two parties, two sets, Israel, Saudi Arabia, duality, controlling the region and squeezing it from the inside. Okay? Now, those that understand that will understand everything. Am I right?
You got it. Yeah, that's it. If you can understand that, and you use that same formula, you'll understand American politics. You'll understand everything.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yep. Yep.
Yep.
You'll even understand you'll even understand the Likudist Jewish position and the Palestinian position, which is the same thing as the Israeli and Saudi Arabian position. There are two positions controlled by the same side. Never forget that it was the Mossad, after Israel was set up, bought and paid for by the Rothschild family in the Balfour Resolution. They created Hamas and Hezbollah. They were bought and paid for by the Mossad and MI6 and the Rothschild family to be an agitator, an agitprop force to the new state of Israel so they could use them as a boogeyman to gain more territory. Okay? Never forget it.
That's it. Same thing's happening here, the Begelian dialectic. It's a little different here, but they're using the Negroid, and then they're using us in apartheid. It's the same thing.
Yeah, it's the same
while thing. They sit the back thing. And rub their hands.
It's the same thing how they're using Antifa and La Raza, the same way they use Hezbollah and Hamas over there. Same thing. Same exact
thing. Or Antifa and the alt-kike right. Yeah.
Oh, the alt-kike right. Yep.
All right, one last thing this QS said that I want to mention. Just if your eyes have not opened yet, white listener, I think this says it all. She said that white South Africans, or basically the Boer, okay, are born into a, quote, system of privilege, unquote. Now, I bring this up because the Negroid has been, you know, on the surface in power here for the past 25 years. How have white South Africans been born into a system of privilege? We're not. It's not our system. It's never been our system in the first place, but it's especially not our system now. And my point is that I want the white man to ask himself, and even the black South African to ask himself, how are you in any better position now after 25 years of being in power than you were back before? You're
well,
not.
My recommendation,
you're not any better.
William, my recommendation would be instead trying to have dialogue with the low IQ African, almost clinically retarded race. You would be better off speaking directly to the Jew above you who controls the system and say, listen, and this is what I brought up years ago.
I am. They're listening.
This, well, I know they're listening to me right now, and you better listen carefully. Because the monster's mash that you have created, the diabolic, sick, and twisted world of multiculturalism that you have created, will benefit you in the short run. But in the long run, these same low IQ degenerate beasts will come to overthrow you the same way that you have overthrown us 50 to 80 years from now. And I hope you never forget my words. You will fall if you succeed the same way.
Yeah,
you are only benefiting. You are only benefiting in the short run, because at the end of the day, it is muscle over money. It is muscle over brains. And the majority of the population at the end of the day will win and overthrow through brute force. And you are on the losing end of the stick. You think you fucked us over. You think you Jews have fucked the white race over. But at the end of the day, you are going down as well. And you need to think long and hard. The dialogue that I want to have is not with the low IQ degenerate beast. It is with our adversary. Our adversary that we face. The Jew. The international Jew.
They won't.
Well,
they won't, though.
Well, you know what?
Yeah.
Then we need total victory. And that gets us into the other topic we're going to talk about, doesn't it? Because if we can't negotiate with them, or the low scale of IQ on the other end, then what do we need to do?
You asking me?
Right?
Yeah.
Well, I'm telling you. I'm saying if we can't talk to the Jew that runs the system and negotiate with him, and we can't convince the low IQ wedge races to work with us, then we need to do our own thing. And we need to do it rather well.
Yep, because, hey, Jews, guess what? Once you succeed in genocide my Aryan race, we're the buffer. We're the buffer zone that's protecting you.
Yep.
Once we're gone, your number is, you're not, like Mike said, you're next. We're the only thing protecting you.
They're done, but they're too stupid because they're spiritually blinded through their Talmud. And like a lot of them are atheists, and they don't have any spiritual thought. They live for today. They have no afterlife. You know, they have no thought of the future or their grandkids or their children. They live for material possessions. They're a religion based upon the flesh and materialism of today. And that will get your offspring killed tomorrow. When you live only for today, your offspring will die for tomorrow. And the wedge that you have given power to, the low IQ wedge that you have empowered, is only going to be here. They're only going to reproduce even more. And they're not going anywhere because their reproduction on itself will make sure they're here 100, 200 years from now, and we will be gone, and you will be here, and you will have to face the island of Dr. Majew, the island of Dr. Majew, and all the sick and twisted, mixed race, sickly animals that you have created in your sick and twisted island of Dr. Majew. And they will take you down. Anyway. It's a good show title, by the way. The Island of Dr. Majew.
Yeah. Yep, Mike, exactly. Well, go ahead, Mike. By all means, it was your idea about the next topic, and I'd be honored if you'd want to open it up and say what you want to say about it.
I over the last couple of years, and this is going to be a controversial topic, but I think it's a topic that needs to be laid out, because a former platform I was on, that Richard was on as well, and that many of us was on, has tried to debunk and derail ideas and thoughts coming from a white nationalist perspective and label them as frauds or disinfo agents and that kind of thing. I don't want to call out anybody, but I would say maybe if there was a disinfo campaign, it would be coming from that platform that seems to be so easily aroused to labeling anybody they disagree with as being agent provocateurs or disinfo. And one book came to mind recently that I never read, but over the last 3 years was maligned by a former platform I was on as being Fed posting, as being violent, as being the most hateful book that's ever been written. And that was the book by James Mason, the book Siege. I finally, after 3 to 3.5 years of listening to my old platforms call people siege tards and retards and dumbasses, I finally read the book. And God, it was like almost 600 pages, almost as big as War and Peace. But let me say, I disagreed vehemently with 30 to 35% of the book. I thought it was gratuitous, belligerent, and maybe reckless. The other 65% I thought was brilliant and right on point. And the thing about the book that killed me was the fact that this book by James Mason was actually written, there were actually articles composed from 1980 to 1986, way over 30 to 35 years ago. And what I was amazed at was the fact that while I was offended by the 30 to 35%, I thought it was gratuitous and ridiculous. I thought the 65% to 60% was brilliant and right on point. And pre-internet, by the way, let me tell you something. When you were in this movement at the same time that the Order existed, or William Pierce was the only voice, or maybe Tom Metzger on the West Coast, there wasn't much out there. Not at all. And I have to say, for a child that got involved in the white nationalist movement in 1966 at the age of 15 years old to be an editor for the American Nazi Party under Lincoln Rockwell, and then to carry on that tradition until he was partners with William Pierce, who I think was an absolute genius from 76 to the late 80s, and then to come up with his own movement from 1980 to 86. No, I don't agree with some of the violent thoughts that he had,
But then again, this was a man that was talking to boomers in a time before internet. I remember when I was a chapter leader of the John Birch Society from 1992 to 98. I almost went crazy because the only people I had to talk to were stupid fucking boomers that knew nothing, that just wanted to say the N-word and thought it was sketchy. Well,
yeah.
Having dated his material from 80 to 86 as a compilation of articles into a book that was called Siege, I actually had the This Is My White Nationalist Mike Sledge book review. I think the book is a very worthwhile read. And while I disagree with many aspects, 30 to 35% of the book, I would say that 60 to 65% of the book is a very important read to show you where this movement started and how it has progressed over time. And to throw that under the bus and to call people that enjoyed the book siege tards and idiots and morons, I think, is doing a disservice to not only the reader of that more than 500 pages and an 18-hour audiobook, but is doing a disservice to those that sacrificed much of their life for the white struggle and the white nationalist movement before internet, before we had connection. Put yourself in that position of a James Mason at 15 years old in 1966, who becomes the editor of the American Nazi Party under a very legitimate Lincoln Rockwell, I might add, who I think was absolutely legitimate. He was a military hero. He was a military man. He was an intellectual. He was not some throwaway. He was one of our best that put his neck out in a time when nobody else would do it under the late Eisenhower administration going into the Johnson administration. And to know that there was this kid named James Mason that was smart enough at that time to know that things were headed south, who was a precursor, who was a trailblazer, to have his articles in compilation put into a novel. And if you don't agree with some of it, that's fine. But there's no reason to throw under the bus a man that was a trailblazer for what we're doing now. And I don't think it's right to call the people that enjoyed his book siege tards. I don't think it's right to label James Mason as an idiot. This man gave up his life, spent time in prison for our cause. Whether you agree or disagree with things that he said, I have to pay him respect. And the fact that William Pierce paid him respect and stood by his side the whole time means the world to me. You know, I've never spent time in prison. I know there are some platforms out there that think they've done a lot promoting flat earth and other ridiculous bullshit and never spent any time behind bars and like to do rap songs with black people, and that's fine. And they want to call themselves white nationalists? By golly, they should. But I'll be goddamned, I'll be Odin damned, if you point your fingers at those that read a book and that you might disagree with certain aspects of the book, of a man that spent years behind bars, that paid his dues, that was a trailblazer by the age of 15, before you even existed, and you want me to make fun and ridicule a James Mason and throw him under the bus? I will not do it as a white man. I find that the most blasphemous thing to do. And while I do not agree with his entirety and his full read of his book, I still have the utmost respect for the trailblazers that brought me to where I'm at today. Without them, we wouldn't exist. And remember, James Mason and William Pierce and Tom Metzger existed in a time before the internet, in a time that you can't even imagine. You had no support at all. You had to argue with boomers every day to get anything done. I say, James Mason,
yeah,
thank you for what you've done. William Pierce, thank you for all the hard work you've done. And while I don't agree with all that you've done, it blazed the trail for where we are today. And without you, we wouldn't exist. And let me say, I will never throw our founding fathers of the white nationalist movement under the bus. I think that's the wrong thing to do. I think it's arrogant and dumbheaded. And more than that, I think it's disrespectful and plain sick. And that is my two words. This has been the two words from Mike Sledge. Thank you so much.
Mike, thank you. I would like to break down a little of what you said there. You mentioned some very important points, such as, you know, this man, James Mason, was 15 when he first started. And,
yep.
You know, all this before the internet. Now,
yeah.
Look, I've only been around for 5-6 years in the so-called white... Oh, wait, what is it, 19? Oh, wow, I've been around for 7 or 8 years, sorry, in the white nationalist movement, which I'm not a white nationalist. I don't fall into that Jew category. I'm a separatist. But the point is, over these 7 or 8 years I've been around, my understanding has evolved, and I am willing to change the way I think over the years. And for someone who's been around that long and wrote that book that long ago, it's obvious that he must have changed and evolved his way of thinking as well.
You have to understand the deep frustration. I was chapter leader of what was called the John Birch Society from 1995 to 1999, really before the internet became what it is today. Mike Sledge, was head of that shit as a chapter leader. And I would get so mad and frustrated because the only people I had to talk to were these senior citizens that were like, oh, the communists are, I got some split pea soup today at the nursing home. Well, let me tell you about the kike and the goddamn, do I have some jello?
And
there was no youth behind what we did. There was nothing. All we had were boomers to talk to and these kind of people to talk to back in those days. And I was on the front lines in those days. I was passing out flyers. I had fucking stands at the fair where I had books laid out. And I remember 1 year at the fair, at the Georgia State Fair, I had a stand set up. And I sold 2 books the whole time I was there for 5 days. I sold 2 books. Because people were too afraid to even walk to my table because they thought the optics were not good. Oh, I can't be seen going over to her table that's talking about Freemasonry and white nationalism and Zionism. And I can't do it. As a matter of fact, just to let your listeners know, I sold 1 book to a black guy from Ghana, Africa, and the other book to a guy from Chile. Not one white person bought my book in 2004 at my stand at the fair. Not one white person bought my book. But I did have one white guy tell me that the American flag banner I had on the front of the table was touching the ground just a little bit, and he was offended by it, and I needed to lift it up
But the fucking Bucks! Unbelievable, man.
So, you know, I can understand the hatred. I can understand the hatred. Yeah, well, I can understand the hatred that a James Mason or a William Pierce or a Tom Metzger would have for the boomers and the assholes back in those days, because it was all waving the flag. And if you were awake to what was really going on back then, pre-9/11, man, it was a tough crowd. It really was. And a lot of times you would say things and write things maybe to be even a little bit over the top on purpose, just to be, you know, you didn't want to do it in real life. You know, it was kind of like violent, ultra-violent political writing, you know, just because you were so, I did that myself. I mean, just because you were so pissed off. You wanted to say the most violent things. Not that you would do it, but just to get a rise out of the people that offended you and made fun of you in public, because you had no base, you had no audience. And I think a lot of people don't understand that. And I think it's unfair to treat his writings. Remember, Siege is a book that was written from 80 to 86 as a compilation of articles that he wrote for the National Socialist Liberation Front, which he started from 1980 to 86. I think it's unfair to label those all as garbage when you don't put it into the time frame that it existed. And I understand the frustration, and I think that maybe Mr. Mason went over the top just to get a rise, as like it was an art form, you know. It was kind of like what these groid rappers do when they talk about killing people in rap songs that they never would probably do, but it was just to get a rise, man. Do you understand what I'm saying?
That's a great point. Yeah, that's a brilliant point, Mike. Another thing that people will argue that makes him discredited is his, I don't know if he had a relationship or if he was associated at one point with Anton Juillet. Now, that to me is a red flag as well, but I would appreciate
his,
to tell the audience
his relationship.
You know,
James Mason's relationship with Anton LaVey, he writes, if you read the book, Siege, he actually talks about it, which nobody has read. They just label him as a siege tard. Let's throw a guy that was friends with William Pierce, who spent time in prison, who worked from the time he was a kid for the white nationalists, for our race. Let's throw him under the bus because we don't like optics, you faggot, on whatever platform you're on. I don't really care. But no, that's not true. What he wrote in his book on Anti Levine, who was a Jew, Anton LaVey, was that prior to LaVey, there was nobody talking about this. I mean, even Anton LaVey's Satanism on a humanistic scale was basically a precursor to a Satru and neo-paganism, okay? Because it was about the will. It was about the will to power. And it debunked the Judaic Christian trap snare that was set for our people to fall into. Turn the other butt cheek,
love thy enemy.
You know, love thy enemy, when prior to that, we killed our enemy and we never turned our butt cheek for any man or any woman. We only turned their butt cheek, the women, that is. So, they perverted the whole thing. So what he was commenting on in that book was the fact that even LaVey in his Judaic nihilistic atheistic ways still presented some truth as the adversary to the Zio Christianity lie that kept us weak. Remember, going back to Darbyism and the Scofield Bible and Christian Zionism, that branch of Christianity, which was the modern-day branch of evangelicalism, the Azusa Street Revival, going back to the Darby School, the Scofield Bible, was the Zio-Christian branch that made us slaves to Zionist Judaism after Theodor Herzl. It was done at the same time. So an atheistic hard push against that, even that from a Judeo-atheistic push from Anton LaVey had some truth in it. And that is what James Mason was commenting on. And I think if you're a real intellectual who studied literature and different philosophies, you would understand that. You wouldn't have to take it literally. Okay? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel ashamed of myself for having believed those individuals that had been, you know, railing on this guy. Maybe I don't like some of the quote-unquote siege towards tactics at the time
for
calling and disrupting. I don't like that at all. But I'm going to have a different.
But you know what, though? I was thrown off a former platform in a way that I thought was disgusting, and other people I've known have been treated the same way by this same platform. And I don't want to get into it, but I mean, who am I going to believe? Someone who William Pierce defended to the end? Someone who gave his life from the time he was 15 years old to our cause and the survival of our race? Or some faggot who's running a gay network with some fucking idiot woman who, you know, anyway, I don't want to get into it, but the bottom line is, I mean, I'm not going to throw, even if I disagree vehemently with some of the ideas of a predecessor of mine on this road, I am not going to throw a man that gave his life to our race under the bus just because I disagree with some fucking lines in a 500-page book. And I got to tell you something.
Yeah.
There, by the grace of God, could be you or I. Okay? I said things 5, 6, 7 years ago on radio shows that I regret now, that I wish I didn't say. But God damn it. I hope you don't throw me completely under the bus either. We all make mistakes. We all say things. But the bottom line is, I'm not going to throw a man under the bus who has no money, who I know for a fact doesn't, who gave his life to this cause, who suffered trials and tribulations to lay the groundwork for what we're doing now. Even if I disagree with him, I will not throw him under the bus because that is immoral, and it is wrong to my race to do that, and I would never do it in a million years. Sorry.
No, that's Mike. Thank you, because I was thinking the same thing. What in 20 or 30 years from now, if any of our shows are somehow still left around, and what if we're wrong about something? Which I don't think we are wrong about much, but with the information that we're given today or that we've discovered on our own today, what if new information comes out in the future and, you know, appear to be wrong about something 20 or 30 years from now? That is what's going on with James Mason.
Well, I think James Mason, look, here's the whole thing with James Mason. When he was 15 years old, he became an editor for the American Nazi Party under Lincoln Rockwell in 1966-67. This was during the height of the hippie movement and the counterculture, okay? There was no, believe it or not, what LaVey was doing was actually counter to the hippie culture in many ways. What Manson was doing was counter to the hippie culture in many ways. in a radical way. Charles Manson, that is. Okay, I'm not going to back down from that.
Other guy he was associated with. That's right.
Well, I have no problem with that. Let me tell you something. Charles Manson was railroaded. Roman Polanski was married to LaBianca Tate and connected to the Folgers heirs. They were engaged in pedophilia going on in that house in Hollywood and all kinds of other debaucherous activities. Okay? The people that died in that house that night by the so-called Manson family were most likely pedophiles, drug dealers, and all kinds of swine. So let's get over the fact that this was some helter-skelter against innocent people first and foremost, okay? And I'm not trying to defend Charles, okay? I'm not trying to defend Charles Manson here, but I'm just trying to say Roman Polanski had to leave the fucking country because he was a pedophile. He had to go to France.
That's right.
He was like the Jeffrey Epstein. Okay, this would be the equivalent if Charles Manson was alive today, his followers killed Epstein and people on Epstein Island as a helter-skelter and then got crucified by the Judaic court system as some Nazi fucking gang of assassins. Okay? This is what... Let's get over this concept that Manson and his people and the people that did this were totally in the wrong. Okay? I don't know that they were. But what I know is that a lot of the evidence was that these people that were killed in that house were total douchebags, pedophiles, drug-dealing scumbag. All right? And it was covered up by the system and made to be a total farce against the counterculture. So with James Mason's book, when he talks about this, he's identifying to the fact that, you know, look, if there would have been some guy that went down to Little St. James and, you know, carved up a bunch of pedophiles, are we supposed to feel bad about that? Are we supposed to feel sad about that? And those that say, hey, that's not a good thing, well, I'm not promoting violence, but I'm just saying, don't get it mixed up. I mean, let's look at the whole story here. You're dealing with the Tate LaBianca murders, Roman Polanski, pedophilia, drugs, and a lot of the interviews that Manson has said in jail make total sense that have not been completely played out. You can go on YouTube and listen to them. The ones that have not been cut out, by the way, are pretty goddamn interesting. And there's more to that story than you'll ever know. Trust me.
Well, Mike, it's Sledge and DeHewitt. Pro-Manson. Pro-Mason.
Yeah. No, I'm not pro-Manson. I'm not pro, you know.
I know. But, you I'm know, just saying. That's what they're going to say.
You know what? I don't give a shit. I don't care if they do, but I'm not going. Let me tell you something. They're doing shows at that other platform that are throwing William Pierce under the bus now, okay?
He made a video game back in the 90s. Yeah.
So what? You know, the video game that William Pierce made was called Ethnic Cleansing. It was made in the early 2000s. How is that different from World of Warfare or any of the other Zio Jewy video games where they genocide people on a daily basis? Not different at all. And they're held to hero status. EA Sports, they're given their own fucking websites. But he has one joke game, and people supposedly on our side, on a platform that's supposedly defending us, is going to point that out and not point out the other crimes? I don't believe anything they have to say. Frankly, I think they're full of shit. So anyway,
But I'm done. I don't want to get into that because I could go on ad nauseum for hours on how they're full of shit. But anyway, but they want to if they would spend their time throwing more Jews under the bus, I would be happy. But they're throwing our guys under the bus over small disagreements and ridiculous shit when I'm not going to do it. I refuse to do it. I'm not going to punch to the right, but I will punch to the left and knock those two bozos out with no problem. Mr. Google, you know who you are, Mr. Google. You used to work for Google. You know who you are. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, I mean, I'll make one correction, if you don't mind. And you know better, Mike. Come on. Don't make me do this. I don't care about punching to the left or the right because I'm not a leftist or a right.
Well, I care when they're throwing... Look, I just want to say this. I've been doing this shit for like 11, 12 years.
I'm contradicting.
You know what? I've been doing this shit for 11 or 12 years. But I'll be goddamned.
About the left
hand. William.
Things are the same Jewish bird of prey.
Well, you know what? Yeah, I understand that. But I'll be goddamned if they're going to start throwing people under the bus.
I know
that are icons that gave their life and their money and their freedom in many cases in jail to blaze the pathways for us. I'm not going to sit here and play Monday morning quarterback in some gay way on some shitty fucking website saying, oh, he's a fucking faggot. He shouldn't have done that. Mr. Mason is violent and supported the Manson family. Well, you're supporting the official narrative. That's like saying, what? If Charles Manson would have killed Jeffrey Epstein and the media would have said that Jeffrey Epstein was the good guy, would Renegade have a show saying, I don't like Mr. Mason's book because he killed Epstein. Well, that's what he's saying, in fact, you dumbass from 35, 45 fucking years ago, you fucking moron. Okay? So, you know, if we're not going to fall for the official story, why are you supporting the official story? And why are you spending a lot of time throwing our guys under the bus when you need to throw yourself under the fucking bus, if you know what I mean? So there you go.
Thank you. Yes. I agree with you, Mike. I agree. And, you know, I didn't until... At first, when you started telling me about this, I thought, oh, God, Mike, come on. You didn't get bought. You didn't buy into this. And then it only took you a few minutes to explain a few things to me. I get it now completely, and I feel ashamed of myself.
No, I actually read the fucking book. I spent a whole week reading the fucking book. I read it from page to page, and as I was reading it, I listened to the audiobook on top of it, and I'm telling you, the things that they're accusing this guy of is not true. Yeah, there are some viewpoints that are edgy and I disagree with, but he's not a domestic terrorist and calling for terroristic fucking attacks or anything. That's bullshit. He never did that anywhere in the book. And I just find it, you know, it's kind of like War and Peace, you know, by Tolstoy. It's so long that you can say you're quoting from the book and nobody will ever know if you really are or not, because most people are too lazy to read anything over 150 to 200 pages. You know, you're dealing with, you know, War and Peace by Tolstoy is fucking like, what, 700 pages? I mean, it's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
You know,
well, I'm going to read the book. I'm going to listen to it. And, I promise you that. I will listen to it. I'll get it done as soon as possible. And I don't know if I think it's worth it. And by the way you're talking, I think it probably is worth it. Maybe we should have him on. What do you think?
Well, I would like to interview the guy just to interview him on his William Pierce connections. He was very close to William Pierce.
Yeah.
I've already interviewed Metzger. I would like to interview him on that. I would also like to interview him on his Prometheus perceptions from the late 60s to early 70s, because yeah, I know that the other platform likes to say, he's a Jew, he supported Anton LaVey, Anton LaVey's Church of Satan, blah, 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 blah. But no, that really was the Jewy sidetrack to the Promethean, to the Prometheus observation, which is basically mainstream Nordic paganism of today. And, you know, there are plenty of podcasts. I love the Nordic Frontier, for instance, their podcast. I think it's a great podcast. You know, I love Asatru. I love what the work they do. This is Promethean philosophy, you know, and back then you didn't have an internet. You didn't have the way of deducing things like we have now and that kind of thing. So, I mean, it's just not fair to, but you can see the early stages of a Promethean philosophy being put together, going back to those times. And, I find it rather interesting. I would like to talk to him on that, his Promethean perspective, the early days with George Lincoln Rockwell, I find very interesting. And working his way into another guy, Tomasius, that was, the founder of the National Socialist Liberation Front in the mid-70s, who was murdered by some fake white nationalists, actually, some fed white nationalists in the mid-70s, who was onto something I find brilliant. That as well, and then going on to, because you have to understand that this Stege book is a compilation of writings from 1980 to 86. I mean, there are four or five chapters from 80 to 86 that are straight prophetic. Prophetic without denial, if you read the book or listen to the audiobook, that I find amazing that he nailed on the head. 65 to 70% nailed on the head. You can argue about 30%. But let me tell you something, man. A writer who gave his life to our race, to our cause, 35, 40 years ago, that nailed 60%, 65%, I want to talk to. And I think that's interesting, and not someone who should be treated like a fucking clown and thrown under the bus and treated like a joke when their record ain't that good, if you know what I mean.
Well, I agree. And, I already asked you if I can be on there if you do broadcast or if you do interview him.
Sure.
I want to be on there. I won't say much in case I'll only bring something up politely if I'm given the opportunity to, but maybe we can simulcast it. Maybe we can arrange it so that I can do it on this platform and also on the Laugh-Off Strike and the Hewitt House Radio. Maybe we can simulcast it. We'll have to work something out, but I'd really like to be a part of that, if that's okay.
Absolutely, and this would be a professional interview, a respectful interview. I just think he's an interesting individual, and I don't like how, you know, it hurt me when I spent 3 to 4 years doing what I thought was right to help our people, our race, the European people, and then I was dismissed and dumped in the dumpster by many of folk. It really hurt me, man. And I can only imagine someone that spent the time and his energy for years and then to be just dismissed as a crackpot like that when I don't think that's right and I don't think it's fair. And I think context is a big deal, and it means everything. And
yes.
So that's my stance. And anyway, thanks for having me on, William, and thanks, Richard, for having me on Revision Media. I love this website. I think this is the cutting edge, and I look forward to many more, and we'll try to set up this interview. And thanks for having me on, brother.
My pleasure,
great to
Mike.
Have you here.
Thank you again, my friend. Yes, thank you. All right, everybody.
And,
well, another episode.
And Richard,
go ahead, Mike. Go ahead.
Richard, real quick, if you would email me, we need to set up. I want to interview on my platform about your platform very soon, whenever you can. I think that'd be a great show if you'd want to.
Sure. Yes, I'll message you and we can set that up. Sounds good.
Yeah, that'd be great. The Laugh Strike at gmail.com. Just go ahead and email me, and we'll go ahead and set that up. I'd love to. I want to do that because I think it's very important to cross promote. So
excellent. And I do relate to a lot of what you mentioned, even regarding the previous platform. I mean, a lot of times dismissing someone, sticking to the official story as your reasoning behind it. I mean, that is similar to one of the ways that I was, dismissed. The main thing that brought it up, really.
Yeah.
I mean, Zen Gardner, you know, I mean, he was in the Children of God, and he left after trying to fix it from the inside. He had his family, you know, he met his wife once he was already in that commune for years. They'll have your family members spread out to different parts of the world, even to make it more difficult if you want to leave. You're not even near your family members in the same commune. But, you know, after trying to change things, Zen left. He later, after being successful in the truth movement for about 6 years, he decided to reveal this past, thinking that people would understand. The truth movement didn't understand whatsoever. But when I was...
And they threw him under the bus.
Yeah. And when I was dismissed, I mean, that was one of the things. Maybe there were some problems brought up with some other guests of mine. Stupid reasons, such as, say, them being Christian and Jew-wise, as if Christians aren't people we want on our side or something. But
yeah.
I had Zen Gardner as someone who I stood by from the information I had, you know, the research I did as a journalist. And
absolutely.
That wasn't good enough for these people. The only research they did was from a mainstream media news clip from the 90s when the Children of God were originally outed. And what it claimed, blanket claims that everyone in the cult knew everything that was going on for the longest time. Basically, they just took that one clip for their documentary on pedophilia and to justify Zen and myself as being pedophiles ourselves. And and just from this one clip from the Jewish corporate media, one clip, only one clip from the Jewish corporate media seemed to be the research that woman did in their documentary. So it was absurd.
That's the way it goes, brother. And and that's my whole thing, is they love these hit pieces, these quick smears, and then they put that out there and they follow it and there's no follow up, and you know, people have no attention span and they don't want to research. And that first clip, you know, the first impression, as people say, is always what sticks, and it's unfortunately true, my friend.
Yep. Richard, I should have asked you to say something before I was wrapping the show up. I really apologize. I should have. I don't know. I didn't think to
ask you
to say anything. So
that was a great show.
Saying something.
I didn't want to interrupt.
Thank
it was
you.
A great show. And I look forward to your future broadcasts. Look forward to Mike being around again. And Mike, I will definitely email you to set that up. I look forward to it.
Yeah, I definitely want to set that up, Richard, because I think that'll be a great show. I want to talk about how you started out and how you started Revision. And I think it'll be great. So just email me and we'll get that done, man.
Yes, sir.
Thanks, brother. Thanks
Thank
for having
you.
Me back.
My pleasure. Have a great day.
You too, man.
All right, everybody, thank you for listening to No Separation, No Peace. I will be back next week. Cheers, everybody.